Ten of Stone Drum's dog soldiers crouched in the chokecherry bushes at the crest of the rim that surrounded the hidden valley, occupied by the hated whites. The oldest among them, a smooth-muscled man in his mid-30s, father of three boys and two girls, nodded, his hawk-beaked nose pointing out the crude shelters erected by Pease's men.
We must find Falling Horse. One of you go to the camp of Stone Drum. Our chief must know of this also.
They have moved close to the land of the Blackfoot, Good Sky.
Good Sky nodded again, and a flicker of a smile lighted his face.
That is why when we attack, we must do it swiftly, Young Bear, with all our warriors. None must escape to tell their friends the Blackfoot.
Good Sky looked around at the men with him.
Young Bear, you are lightest. You can move fast without tiring your pony. Go to Stone Drum. Otter, you go to Falling Horse. The rest will stay here. Keep watch. Guide our dog soldier brothers to this valley.
We are strong enough to take them now.
I think not. It is better that we wait.
That wait lasted 3 days. Young Bear and Otter rounded up all of the roving dog soldiers who had been searching for the whites, and they brought them into the valley. There, Falling Horse laid his plans for the attack. He saw at once that some of the whites would no doubt break free of their initial charge and escape the camp that had been established, but he wanted to cause what damage he could.
We are not enough in numbers to close off both ends of the valley, but we can come from both sides to increase their confusion. It is best after that to ride to where we can join forces and fight our way back through one side. Stealth and surprise will be important.
Without further discussion, the Cheyenne set out to make ready for war. Many of the dog soldiers painted themselves and their ponies for the event. Others made up in soft tones of brown and green in order to sneak up close on the unsuspecting whites before the signal was given to charge. When everyone had reached his proper place, a bird call advised Falling Horse of this. The time had come. The Cheyenne thundered toward the assortment of tents and brush shelters from upstream and down.
Engines!
Ezra Pease jolted from his folding camp stool and rushed to the open flap of his tent.
Hold tight. We outgunned them.
How do you know? There could be hundreds of them.
I know, because we're the ones who sold them the guns.
Soon became clear that the engines were advancing in a two-pronged attack. With them, they brought firebrands, which they threw into the brush shelters. Quickly, the battle turned in the Cheyenne's favor. For all their superiority and firepower, Ezra Pease saw that they had no choice but to make a run for it.
Harness the teams!
Then, totally unexpected, when the two wings of the charge met near the middle of the camp, the hostiles turned in one direction and dashed out of the encircling white men. But not before they had snatched up a case of rifles, two kegs of powder, and one of bullets packed in layers of sawdust.
Damn them. Damn them all. They could come in here and take what they want, and then run like whipped dogs, and not get away with it.
There can't be more than 40 of them. Everyone mount up. I want them hunted down and killed. Every last one.
Two wagons ambled into the missionary's valley late the next afternoon. They presented a sorry sight. Both wagons had broken down repeatedly on the rough trail north of Trout Creek Pass. Silas Phipps was suffering from alcohol withdrawal, and his orphans all appeared sickly too. They stumbled around like walking corpses. All of the missionaries agreed that they needed considerable care. Ruth assumed the duty of being the group's spokesperson.
Our supplies ran out 2 days ago. We haven't had anything to eat since then. Peter has a fever. Please, please, can you help us?
Oh, you poor dears. We'll get you fed right away. Where is the sick boy?
In the front wagon.
Now, you keep your hands off that boy. He's just faking being sick to get out of work.
Preacher didn't like the cut of Silas Phipps at first sight. He had a meanness about his mouth and little squinty eyes that darted from place to place.
You a doctor?
No, I'm not. And it's none of your concern.
Uh-huh. Well, since you're not a doctor, you don't know any more about how sick that boy is than I do. So you let the women take care of him.
They can ply him with some soup. And maybe some medicine. We can all use something to eat. But mind, they're not to touch him or take him out of those clothes.
Preacher wondered on that stipulation throughout that day and into the next. Peter responded to the ministrations of the missionary women and roused out of his fevered state by mid-afternoon. Once the affliction had left him, he ate ravenously. Talk went around the new settlement about asking the wanderers to remain in the valley. Preacher objected to that, but he withheld comment. On their second full day in the valley, the children had lost some of their listlessness and befriended children among the missionaries and refugees, in spite of the efforts of Silas Phipps to prevent that. When several of the boys, including young Peter, went downstream to take a bath, Preacher went along to stand guard. When the lads had undressed, little Nick stared at Peter, his eyes wide with wonder.
Jehoshaphat, what happened to you?
It's nothing.
Don't tell me that. Someone whomped on you real fierce.
No. No one did it. I fell. Fell off the wagon.
Made curious by the anxious tone in Peter's voice, Preacher cut his eyes to where the boys stood naked and knee-deep in the chill creek. His eyes widened and turned as hard as high-quality flint when he saw all the scars on Peter's back. Fresh purple welts crisscrossed the boy's shoulders, the small of his back, and his skinny buttocks. It brought a flash of fury. Then Preacher recovered his go-easy mountain man outlook. Well, it wasn't his business, he decided. Some kids needed rough handling to be brought up right. It might be that Phipps fella told the truth about Peter. Then he recalled that the Injuns raised some mighty fine youngsters without ever laying a damn hand on them. Small wonders Phipps didn't want the women to see the boys back. Preacher dismissed his immediate concern. They'd spend only another day and a night in the valley, resupply what they could, and then Phipps would be told to move on. He'd point the way back to Trout Creek Pass to Phipps and bid him good luck. These young'uns weren't his to be worrying about, and he turned back to his guard duties. The boys quickly bathed, and when they had all dressed, Preacher marched them back to the settlement. There he found Cora Ames all a tither over the condition of the older girls.
There's something very wrong in the lives of these children.
Such as?
They won't say anything. In fact, they deny that something unpleasant has been going on.
Only you don't think that's the truth?
Oh, Preacher, all I have are suspicions. But they seem to be in absolute terror of that Mr. Phipps.
I'll just keep an eye on Phipps for as long as they're here with us.
Will you, Preacher? It's all I can ask, I suppose. And tell the others, too. Beartooth, Dupree, and Nighthawk.
Oh, sure, Miss Cora. Done without saying. Ain't none of us cottons to the man. I reckon it was him who gave Peter a powerful beating. More than one at that.
Oh, how badly was the boy injured?
I reckon it's what gave him the fever. Some of them stripes was deep. They could have festered.
Oh, why, that's monstrous.
Yeah, well, now, it may seem so to you and me, Miss Cora, but if they belong to him, it ain't against the law. He can do whatever he wants with them, short of actually killing one.
Not if he's doing what I think he's done to those girls.
Oh, so it's that way, huh? Might I should have a little talk with Phipps.
I'm afraid that might make things worse for them all.
Not until he got off his back and out of the splints I'd put him in.
Preacher thought at first he was dreaming of a wounded rabbit. That didn't last long. A short distance away, Nighthawk roused from sleep, too.
That's a child.
Yeah, and I know goddamn well where it's coming from.
Preacher slipped into moccasins, drew up his buckskin trousers, and padded off into the darkness. Nighthawk followed him. Preacher sprang up onto the lip of the face of the tailgate to the second wagon that belonged to Silas Phipps. He had been guided there by the soft, dim glow of a candle burning inside. He found Silas at his evil pleasure.
You goddamn scum!
What?
Preacher bent inward and grabbed the perverted vermin by the back of his collarless shirt and scruff of his neck.
Come here!
Nighthawk stood over the astonished Phipps.
Not even the demons of hell will do the things you've done, you sorry bastard!
Those orphans are mine! I can do with them what I want! Besides, she likes it! Just ask her why she purrs just like a kitten.
Get out of the goddamn way, Nighthawk! This one's got him a powerful whooping coming. Get up, you sick son of a bitch!
Don't you touch me! I didn't do any harm!
How many of them little girls have you diddled?
Only the older ones. Those that are 9 or over.
What about what you've done to Peter?
Yeah, him too, a couple of times. Everyone needs love.
You sick bastard!
When Phipps wilted in Preacher's grip, his face a toothless, bloody pulp, the mountain man brought up one knee smartly and smashed it into the pervert's crotch. Then Preacher went to work on the soft belly and vulnerable ribs. The disturbance awakened everyone in the settlement. Lamps bloomed with light and people began to gather. In the forefront, black frock coat draped over nightshirt, came the Reverend Thornton Bookworthy.
Enough! Desist at once! You'll kill that man!
You're right. I'm going about this all wrong. I allow as how any man forcing himself on a woman, and in particular a child, has committed a hanging offense. That's what we'll do with this stinking trash.
Despite the closeness of their earlier conversation, Cora Ames was shocked to the core by Preacher's words.
You can't do that without a trial. This man is entitled to the protection of the law. Everyone is presumed innocent until proven guilty.
God damn it, Miss Cora. If you'll pardon my saying it, I caught him in the act with his britches downed around his knees like they are now, and the little girl stark naked. That ain't no sporting house gal in there. That's a 10-year-old child.
Helen's small, pale face appeared over the tailgate.
Hit him again, Mr. Preacher! Please! Hit him again!
We can't hang him. Why, it's uncivilized.
That's right. Everyone knows that hanging people is no deterrent to crime.
Oh, I beg to point out that hanging is a surefire way to deter the feller from doing it. Any rapist, once he's hung, he sure as hell won't never rape anyone else.
Buck Dempsey stepped forward.
I agree with Preacher. We are establishing a community here, and we're responsible for enforcing the laws. As I recall, rape is a capital crime. Now I say we select a jury from amongst ourselves. Did you see what went on, Nighthawk?
I only saw Preacher drag this wretch out of his wagon.
Good. Then you can be the prosecutor, Nighthawk. Beartooth can be the bailiff. Dupree can be judge. And Reverend, if you feel so strongly against the death penalty for such scum as Phipps, you can damn well defend the lowlife trash.
More lanterns were brought, the fire built up, and everyone gathered around. Only the children were barred from witnessing the events that transpired. When summoned, Beartooth escorted each of the orphans forward to testify. Each one sobbed out their face-reddening, humiliating experience. Through it all, Silas Phipps grew more surly.
You're a lying whelp, Helen!
It's the truth, and you know it! I swore to myself I'd never tell a soul. I thought the shame would kill me. But if it will free us of you, I'm glad to answer what they want to know.
Peter told of the many beatings and of the dark, degrading, secret things Phipps had compelled him to do.
You're a liar! Same as the others, you miserable brat. Next time, I'll whip the life out of you.
I don't reckon you're gonna get a next time.
Dupree wrapped a pistol butt on the barrel head that served as his bench.
Let's not get out of line, mon ami. You'll have your chance to give testimony in a little while.
What's wrong with right now?
I seem to recall something about establishing a link between the accused and his crimes. Monsieur Pettibone was kind enough to instruct me in this custom of law. So, we need to start in the past and bring it up to the events of this evening. Then we can hang the bastard right legal and proper. Proceed, Monsieur Prosecutor.
What happened after the last beating, Peter?
He smeared me with axle grease. He was real tender about it, especially my backside. I knew what he wanted.
Phipps came to his feet, hands fisted, and eyes wild.
Shut up, you dirty little liar!
Dupree cut his eyes to Beartooth.
Bailiff, Please restrain the defendant.
Yes, Your Honor. Is that good enough, Judge Dupree?
Fine as frog fur, bailiff. Son, please continue.
Peter continued. Then Preacher was called. He related being awakened, recognizing the cries to be those of a child, and following the sound to the second wagon of Phipps. At that point, he became ill at ease. He shrugged and shuffled his feet till he at last turned to Dupree.
Judge, can we ask the ladies to be excused before I say what it is I found inside that wagon?
Considering the circumstances, I find that a reasonable request.
Realizing that if Preacher revealed all the gruesome details the client forced upon him would surely hang, Reverend Bookworthy protested.
The Constitution guarantees a speedy and public trial. The Lord knows this is speedy enough. If the women folk are excused, it will not be entirely public.
Now hold on a minute there, Père Bookworthy. I've never been in a real court but once, and the one I was in didn't allow women to witness the trial. I'm going to rule that the women be excused. Clear this court of the females.
After the women had gone, Preacher described what he had seen. Everyone that remained bowed their head, utterly disgusted by what they had just heard. Then Dupree addressed the Reverend.
Do you have anything to offer in defense, Père Bookworthy?
I call Silas Phipps.
Phipps took the oath, then slumped on the barrel used as a witness chair.
Phipps, this is your chance. Have you anything to say in your own defense?
I may have done some bad things in my life, but it wasn't my fault. I had an awful childhood. My parents beat me. They didn't love me. I had an uncle, my dad's brother, who bedded with me when I was small. I was shunned by the other children because we were poor. I went hungry almost every day.
Phipps went on and on about his past life. When he finished, the jury took only 1 minute to reach a verdict.
Guilty.
But it isn't my fault. I can't help myself.
Having been found guilty as charged, I sentence you to be hanged by your neck until you are mort. Dead. And may God have mercy on your soul.
No! No! Please, no! I couldn't help myself. It isn't my fault.
Phipps struggled and fought with the four men who wrestled to restrain him. He thrashed all the way to the tall fir tree with the long, thick lower branches. There his hands and feet were tied, and a hastily fashioned rope fitted around his neck. They made him stand atop a small wooden barrel. Preacher stood by Phipps, preparing to kick the barrel out from under him.
Goodbye, you sick bastard.
War talk resumed among the Cheyenne. Many of the younger warriors and war chiefs had grown highly discontented with the failure to settle decisively with Pease.
It is foolish to make war on the whites. Unless we kill all of these men, others will come to avenge them. Think of our women, our children. While we spend our days chasing after them, the Blackfoot are making up for war. We cannot fight them and the whites too.
No, Running Bear. It is the white men who sell guns and whiskey we must kill. When we do, the Blackfoot will have to take counsel again about fighting us. I do not think the whites think well of these men who sell guns and whiskey to our people. I have met with the one they called Preacher. He and three friends are hunting this man called Pease. They mean to stop him.
What can four men do against all those who ride with Pease, Falling Horse?
That is not the point, old friend. What we must do is find Pease first and finish off his fighting men. With Preacher opposed to what Pease is doing, he will speak in favor to his kind. I believe that no other white men will seek to punish us if we kill Pease.
Wind Rider rose to add his sentiment.
Falling Horse is right. This Pease rides like a mighty chief across our lands. He and his warriors are crowding up our open spaces, selling rotten whiskey to those who would drink it, and being troublesome in many ways.
Yes, Wind Rider. The white boy child I took from their camp told how the men with Pease killed his parents and many other whites in a rolling lodge train. and took them captive. This is also where I say the whites will not care who it is that ends the days for peace.
It is known that they're the ones who sold guns to the Blackfoot. We are agreed to fight the Blackfoot if they come into our land. I say we take the battle to them, attack their villages, punish them for trading guns with the whites.
But first, we must make Pease pay for what he has done.
Your words are good, Falling Horse. Yet we must take counsel in what is true, and not give in to being guided by what we wish could be done. I say it is to be moonstruck to decide for a general uprising. Look at the power of the Blackfoot, their great numbers, and the endless stream of whites. Do you forget their tall hats who keep the log wall villages?
Fallen Horse had to admit the wisdom of that argument. Although few in number and widely spread over the high plains, the forts provided a constant thorn to irritate the Cheyenne. After much wrangling, the council decided not to change their initial decision. They would first hunt the whites who had killed Little Knife and his warriors and destroyed the village of Black Hand. More than half the number of braves able to fight would be needed to protect their villages from any surprise attack by the Blackfoot, while the rest went in pursuit of Pease. They would discuss widening the fight later. Fallen Horse had the last word.
I will lead the dog soldiers, if you approve.
Not a one of the council objected. Cora Ames was not speaking to Preacher after the drumhead trial and hanging of Silas Phipps. And that was fine with Preacher. He decided to set off on another hunting sweep, then see to finding Pease. To his surprise, young Peter and Billy overcame their ordeal enough to share their skill in setting snares for smaller game with the boys of the village. Before Preacher departed, the youngsters were out in the woods to trap rabbits, squirrels, and other edible fur-bearing critters.
When will you be back, Preacher?
Before the first game I shoot spoils, Nighthawk.
The one who has her eyes set for you is angry, I gather?
Oh yeah, that she is. I'll never understand women. Cool as old Jim Beckworth she was when it came to shooting Injuns, but she wouldn't abide hanging that rotten trash. Oh well, I reckon the Almighty will sort out whatever, if any, was good about Silas Phipps. I'll be seeing you, Nighthawk.
Preacher took similar leave from the other mountain men. He also had to listen to some flat-out off-color advice about how to re-warm the cockles of Cora's heart. That, he told himself, he didn't need. In the meanwhile, Cora had found herself a new distraction. Over coffee and sweet cakes, she conferred with Lydia Pettibone, Flora Sanders, and, of course, Patience Bookworthy.
These orphans are truly alone now.
Better that than the life they had.
What I'm getting at is they can hardly strike out from here all alone.
Certainly not. Yet they have been so degraded, so shamed, that they are hardly fit for ordinary society, let alone to live among the righteous.
I would expect that coming from you. I am so tired of hearing how righteous you folk are. Wasn't it the Pharisees and the Sadducees who were considered the most righteous among the Jews? And didn't Jesus tell him that he was of his father and they were of theirs, who was a liar and a murderer and a thief from the beginning of time?
I never!
No, I reckon you never have. You've been too busy being righteous.
That shut Patience Bookworthy right up.
Now, Cora, dear, what was it that you had in mind?
These children need homes and parents to love and care for them. Surely there are those among our group who could open their hearts to these waifs?
I'd say so. I am not too old to be a mother hen, and I'd be right pleased to take in that little girl, Gertha, and perhaps Billy.
Cora turned to the others.
Oh, there you are. That leaves only 10 more to be comforted. And another thing, we should start thinking toward a school. Our own children are running wild without the education they need. 12 more only add to the importance of schooling.
I agree. Our Jason is becoming more like those mountain men every day. He even wants a set of buckskins to wear.
Patience Bookworthy had recovered from her snit enough to be scandalized all over again.
That goes to show you. We must be shut of these uncouth hooligans as quickly as possible. They are a bad influence on the children.
I think buckskins make a lot of sense. Out here. We have no ready supply of cloth, and tailor-made clothing costs dearly if any is available. With animals in ample supply, we can have an endless quantity of clothing. Preacher says we can even trade with the friendly Indians for ready-made buckskin clothes.
Just the thought of that animal skin against my person makes me cringe.
Judging from what we brought along, we women would not be subjected to that for a long time. Perhaps never if the land is settled as quickly as our mountain men guides seem to think. Yet it would certainly stretch our husbands' and sons' meeting house clothes a lot longer. It does no harm for boys and men to wear clothing made from animal skins. Not if they are decorated as attractively as those of Preacher.
Well enough for you to say, with neither man nor child to care for.
Yes, but that's of my choosing, not for any lack of suitors.
Patience let it go without challenge. Talk returned to the proposed school while the level in the coffee pot lowered steadily. Lydia Pettibone offered to teach the lower grades, and her husband would provide instruction in music. Martha Yates offered to teach the older children. Patience Bookworthy, naturally, stated that she would teach religion.
But not all of us are of your persuasion. True enough, Flora, yet we all worship the same God. The moral truths of religious belief are the best guidelines children can have when growing up. Take the Ten Commandments out of the schools and we'll raise up a nation of heathen savages more benighted than the Indians.
I heartily agree. The Ten Commandments were not the Ten Suggestions or Hints. They represent the absolute distillation of moral law. Without them, where would civilization be?
Their talk went on until the women realized with a start that they would have to scurry to prepare the noon meal for their laboring men. They set off in a flutter of skirts, their hair in disarray. Cord Dixon cut his eyes to the ugly features of Grant Ferris. Bucktooth Ferris had the unsightly habit of picking his nose in the presence of others. Had Cord Dixon not been a knife artist who gloried in gutting his victims, it would have turned his stomach. He and Seth Branson had been partnered with Grant Ferris for 9 days now, searching for any sign of Preacher. They had gone to the trading post at Trout Creek Pass 3 times in those days. If anyone knew anything, they sure didn't share it with the scruffy trio of hard cases. Now Dixon, the nominal leader, wanted a unanimous decision from his companions. His hard look made Ferris uncomfortable.
What do you say, Ferris? I'm for trailing north and west of here. Odds are, that's where Preacher went. He sure as hell ain't to the south of the pass.
Right you are, Cord. Only I, for one, ain't all that eager to catch up to him.
Why not?
You know what's happened to all them others what ran afoul of Preacher. Well, I don't plan to become the next.
All we have to do is find him, see where he's holed up, and then go get the rest to finish him off.
Sounds simple enough. Only we've seen enough to know Preacher's a sudden man. He might not just let us walk away.
He will if he don't know we've seen him.
Yeah, it might be easier to let an Injun not know we've seen him.
Sometimes, Ferris, I think you got a yeller streak as wide as my hand running clear down your spine.
No, I ain't. Only I think through something before I act on it.
I've been thinking. Look at it this way. When we get done with this, we'll know more about the country than near anybody.
What good's that?
Well, if we ever decide to break off with Mr. Pease, we can lead folks in there and collect good hard gold for it. We'll be the best guides around.
You will like hell.
Preacher came down out of the trees and onto the trail ahead of the three louts. Seth Branson was the first man to go down, taking 2 lead balls right in the chest. Ferris came out of the saddle and careened down the bank and into the icy little stream that cut through the canyon. Dixon raised his pistol. Dixon's ball put another pair of holes in Preacher's coat.
Now goddamn it all to hell, that's enough!
Preacher shot the hat off Dixon's head. Dixon leapt from his saddle and ran down the trail a few yards. Preacher waited for him to turn about. He had dismissed any threat from the downed Ferris. That slip nearly cost him his life. Ferris had managed to climb up just over the lip of the small ledge.
You should have stayed in that damn creek!
Preacher faced front again in time to see Dixon raise his gun. Preacher dove to the ground. Preacher's ball hit Dixon in the shoulder, but he didn't go down.
Gotta be out of loads by now.
Dixon slid his good hand toward the big butcher knife at his left side.
You was counting all that time, huh? Is that right? Now you gonna knife me? Well, you just go ahead and try. That suits me. I'd as soon not kill an unarmed man.
Just let me go. I'll not do you any harm.
Oh, I'm sure you wouldn't. It's what you've already done that I'm gonna send you off to meet your maker for. Go on, try it.
Poor Dixon whipped out the knife.
Didn't count so good.
A few miles down the trail, Preacher ruminated on his situation. He had become a marked man. There was no doubt of how serious Pease was. The Preacher was just about to have that notion reinforced. Suddenly, a dozen more of Pease's hard cases struck from the rear. Preacher thanked his lucky stars that he had taken time to reload. Wisely, the pursuers momentarily gave up firing to duck behind cover. In a smooth motion, Preacher slid from Thunder's saddle and snagged up his pair of rifles. He hunkered down behind a large boulder before any of the rattled gun hogs could recover enough to take careful aim. He laid the pistol aside and nuzzled Hawkey to his shoulder. At once, he saw motion behind a fallen pine, the thick trunk of which provided protection for Preacher on his right flank. Some fool was charging. Preacher set down the Hawkin and picked up his French rifle. Only the crown of a head and an eyeball of another outlaw showed above the curving surface of the boulder. A chunk of the exposed head exploded in a shower of scarlet. Preacher took the time to reload while his enemies did the same. Preacher methodically reloaded the Hawkin again. Two more made a rush along the trail. Preacher put the Hawkin aside, the ramrod still down the barrel, and drew a pistol. Preacher turned from the fallen tree to engage the second thug. A head and shoulder appeared around the mound of granite, followed by the barrel of a pistol. Three mounted bits of trash spurred forward. Preacher moved to the open side of a stone fortress. He quickly drew a second pistol. Four men came at him at once from three different directions. Preacher sighted in on the nearest one. Quickly, he picked another target. The other two had gotten dangerously close. Preacher aimed for the closest of the two. The first shot went wide, but Preacher never missed twice. Preacher didn't slow down as he stuffed the empty pistol into its holster and reached for his hawk. A cap went into place on the nipple, and he eared back the hammer. As he brought the weapon up, he started to run toward the fourth gunman. The ball took Preacher high in the left arm. Without thinking about the ramrod, Preacher blazed away. The ramrod struck the target like a slender lance. Preacher grabbed a paisley handkerchief and tied it around the wound in his arm.
Ah, shit, that's gonna leave a bruise.
Ezra Pease stomped across the bare grounds of the campsite. He stopped on the far side of the fire to confer with Titus Vickers and Hash Knife.
We should be headed north, not southwest.
Not if we want to stay short of the Cheyenne.
Titus is correct, Mr. Pease. The men I sent out to search for Preacher haven't returned as yet. Perhaps when they do, they will have useful information.
That leaves us with no option but to poke along their trail. It'll
be easier to consolidate our force when the time comes.
You're right, both of you. Now, when we run Preacher to ground, and we are going to, I guarantee you that, I want to deal with him myself. I've been thinking on this. And nothing else will give me as much satisfaction as seeing genuine fear on that ugly face of his.
Might be he won't be so easy to contain. He could force us to kill him from long range.
Well, you'll just have to see to it that he doesn't. I want to feel my fingers around his throat, crushing the life out of him. Oh yeah, Preacher's gonna be mine. And you two are gonna see to it that it happens that way.
Back at the settlement in the valley, Cora Ames ignored the welcome addition of more meat in her consternation over Preacher's wound. Over his objections, She led him by one hand to her recently completed cabin.
There, all done. I will want to see it again tomorrow, and the day after. We don't want it to fester.
Uh-huh. That's why I'm gonna fix me some wild ear bark and some other stuff to pack in the hole.
Don't you dare. Why, who knows what that would cause?
That'll cause it to heal, that's what. Besides, I ain't got 3 days. I'm taking Nighthawk and Buck and starting out tomorrow morning while the trail of the men who jumped me is still fresh. We can track them right back to Ezra Pease.
Why, you can't. You would be risking the loss of that arm. I won't allow it. I'll talk to your friends.
There's nothing you can do. And the boys will tell you that these Injun cures work right good on gunshot wounds.
You lost a lot of blood. You're too weak for such goings-on.
Yeah, well, fact is, I do feel a bit peaked, but ain't nothing a big chunk of elk steak won't fix.
Oh, Preacher, you are impossible.
Early the next day, Preacher set out with Nighthawk and the driver, Buck. They rode in companionable silence for long hours. After crossing the spine of the Sierra Madre by way of Rabbit Ear Pass, they entered a wide, sweeping highland prairie. As the hours and miles went by, Preacher began to notice something that mightily displeased him.
Look it over there. See them smoke trails on the horizon? Over the past 50 miles, I've seen more than a dozen of them scattered out where none existed last year at all.
It's called progress, Preacher. Folks are moving west.
I call it a disaster, Buck. This keeps up. Before long, there'll be so many that the cabins will be cluttered up to near every couple of miles. All right, we're right close to where I took my last deer. Over in those mountains to the east, if we move out at a little smarter pace, we can make it there first thing in the morning.
Well, that suits me fine.
You weren't far from there when you had your run-in with Pease's hooligans?
Yep. I'm guessing that's when the work begins.
Mid-morning found them well past the large tree where Preacher had hung his last kill. In fact, they'd been on the trail of the men sent by Pease for better than an hour. It led constantly north and east. Preacher topped a small saddle draw that marked the access to yet another mountain highland valley. A string of dark objects moving determinedly westward caught his eye.
I got me a bad feeling about this.
Preacher took the spyglass from his saddlebag. With the brass tubes pulled to full length, Preacher focused in on the far-off blobs. He counted 30 of them.
They're coming like flies to a dung heap.
They're what I think they are?
More greenhorn pilgrims headed west. I'd say they don't have the least idea where they are or where they're going. I'll tell you, boys, I've had more than my fill of them. I'd like to run this bunch clear the hell out of these mountains.
But you won't do that.
No. Onliest thing we can do is ignore them and hope they don't see us. Well, let's ride. This trail ain't getting any newer.
What are we gonna do when we find this Pease?
Go back for the rest of the boys and wipe Pease out lock, stock, and barrel.
Fallen Horse and Little Mountain still led their dog soldiers south and west toward the suspected location of Ezra Pease. One of the advance guards sent out by Fallen Horse came back to the column of warriors with exciting news shortly after midday.
Falling Horse, we think we have found them. 6 of the Rolling Lodges, some men, women, a few children.
Yes, Young Bear. Pease took children from a white man's traveling lodge. We took 3 of them from the camp when we raided it. But even if they are not with Pease, it will be good to eliminate some of these wiggling white worms that invade us. We will ride there now. Show us the way.
What the Cheyenne found were a small group of stragglers who had become separated from the wagon train spotted by Preacher and his companions. Quickly, the dog soldiers spread out to launch their attack on the unwanted visitors. They opened fire at a range of 50 yards.
My God, Stub! Where'd those wiggins come from? I never saw one!
You made a mistake in stopping to fix the harness on the Kilmer wagon, Caleb.
You know, we couldn't have left them there all alone, Stub. They've been sitting ducks.
Now all of us are sitting ducks, Caleb. Watch yourself. Get closer.
Caleb raised a double-barrel shotgun at one of the approaching engines. Caleb had filled the gun with buckshot, thinking he would only need it for hunting. The blast had little effect on the approaching brave.
We're going to die out here!
Taking advantage of the sudden and very strange lull in the attack, Caleb peered through the cloud of dust to see what damage had been wrought upon the group. It seemed to be minimal. He then turned his attention to where the engines had regrouped just up the trail.
There seems to be some sort of palaver going on.
Figuring out who gets whose scalp, most likely.
Look, there's three riders heading our way from the west.
It was Preacher, Nighthawk, and Buck. The Fallen Horse had seen him before the Pilgrims had, and that's why he'd called off the attack. The engine chief and Preacher had sworn repeatedly not to make war on one another. The trio of riders rode past the six wagons and stopped their horses at half the distance to the engine's position.
Preacher, it seems that we keep meeting in the worst of circumstances.
That it does, Fallen Horse. I'm going to have to leave these people alone, too. They aren't with Pease either. If you continue the attack, I'm going to have to take it as a personal offense, and many will die this day.
I know you speak true, Preacher. It is said the White Ghost never lies. We will leave now.
Preacher, Nighthawk, and Buck walked their horses back to the huddled immigrants.
Get them wagons straightened out and set the mules off lickety-split, and don't spare them none either. I can't hold these braves forever. Your other folks is about 2 hours ahead of you on the trail.
You saved our lives. We're eternally grateful.
If you was as smart as you were grateful, you wouldn't be here in the first place.
After the last wagon train trundled over the ridge to the west, Fallen Horse came to where Preacher sat mounted on Thunder.
Where do you go that you're this far away from where we met you last?
Like I told you, Fallen Horse, we're out to get that no-account scoundrel Pease.
Then once again, we seek the same man, Preacher. This time, it might not be wise for you to get to the Whiskey Peddler first.
Preacher cocked an eyebrow at his Cheyenne friend.
Ride with the wind, Fallen Horse.
May the rain not take the strength from your bow, Preacher.
The two parties turned their separate ways. For the past hour, as they rode on northeast, Preacher had grown uneasy over the weather. There had been that freak snowstorm 3 weeks back. Now clouds had started to pile up to the west. Already the highest peaks were lost in dirty gray mantles, while the air remained mild, almost balmy.
We got us a storm brewing, Nighthawk.
I can feel it in my bones, Preacher.
What? No scientific double talk to tell us what's happening?
It's the rheumatiz, Preacher. From those long days in the cold water, don't tell me that's not what tipped you off.
Yeah, we'd best be looking for some place to shelter. It could be a bad one.
I've spotted several places already.
Why, you old coot.
Titus Vickers lowered the spyglass.
It's him, all right. Preacher, in the flesh.
Delphus Plunkett, one of the 8 men with Titus Vickers, crawled up beside.
Think we could take him right here and now?
There's 2 more with him.
Yeah, but there's 9 of us. That means we outnumber them by... 2, 3... A whole shit pot!
Haven't you learned that having more men means nothing to Preacher? Look, we'll wait a little while longer. There's a storm brewing. What we'll do is move in on Preacher's back trail, and then close on him when the storm reduces visibility.
Pungent scent of ozone surrounded Preacher as he reached behind him for his poncho-like capote. The first drops of an icy rain fell around him as he whipped his hat from his head and draped the garment over his shoulders.
You have one of those places you saw in mind right now?
I cannot see the nose of my horse. How can I be expected to find shelter?
Well, I got a spot in mind, but we're going to get wet aplenty before we reach it.
Then let's not sit here jawing about it in this deluge.
Preacher took the lead. He kept to the trail, which led up a steep incline. Water quickly gathered and ran in freshets along the sides of the course they followed.
Over there, across the creek.
I see it. A good place.
They found branches and twigs enough for a small fire under the lip that shielded them from the tempest.
Coffee next.
Preacher produced a small battered tin pot.
We'll not be having any trail to follow when this is over.
Only too true.
What do we do next?
We figure out some way to get to where Pease is holed up.
Beyond the other two, who hunkered with Preacher around the small fire that gave scant warmth, Preacher saw flickers of movement against the grayish walls of water that dropped from the sky. Dark figures cut through the tortured aspens and moaning pine.
By gum, we're about to be jumped by more of them carrion eaters. Get down!
Preacher raised his gun and focused in on the moving gray shadow. The lightning illuminated the scene long enough for the group's aim to be adjusted. Nighthawk winged a man. He went down hard.
Damn! Got me in the shoulder.
You all right?
Burns like hell, but I'll manage. Watch this.
Soon the cowardly vermin were in full flight.
They're gone!
For now, maybe. Maybe they've runned off to bring more of their kind. But that might be the ray of hope we're looking for. Saddle up. We'll follow them.
Jehoshaphat, that man has eyes like an eagle.
Weren't by accident, Delphus. I'm beginning to believe the Preacher ain't human.
What do we do now?
Head back. They won't get far as long as this storm continues. We can lead Pease and all the gang right to their camp. That way Preacher won't be pulling any irons out of the fire so easily.
Preacher and his companions made poor headway, faced into the brunt of the storm. The heavenly outrage continued into a second day. Soaked until the pads of their fingers turned white and wrinkled, they still pressed on. Preacher caught a fleeting glance at their quarry, only to lose him in a thick cloud that lowered to fill the canyon through which he, Nighthawk, and Buck walked their horses. Buck's wound had given him a lot of pain. Preacher knew that it would be certain death to send the man back alone. Instead, he treated it frequently with moss and a few drops of whiskey from a small gourd flask tied to Thunder's saddle. Preacher's own arm throbbed from the earlier gunshot and made any quick movement of his left side out of the question. They all held up well, though, confident the fleeing outlaws would lead them to Pease. But their expectations were nearly dashed when they made camp for the night. A hastily constructed lean-to covered with pine boughs provided relief from the constant rain well enough to allow a hat-sized fire. While they dried themselves as best they could, another wave of the stalled-out front swung into place overhead.
God damn! This ain't no fun, fellers!
Has any of this trip been fun, Preacher?
Not so as you noticed it, no!
A bolt of lightning struck a tall pine close to where they had secured the horses by ground anchor. Nighthawk's mount, Sundance, and Buck's ex-outlaw plug panicked. Already weakened by the thorough soaking, the ground gave way around the corkscrew-shaped anchors. The two horses were quickly lost in the driving rain. Only Thunder remained behind.
Easy there, Thunder. Easy, boy. I'm gonna bring you up closer to us.
When Preacher released the anchor and led Thunder up beside the lean-to, the anxious faces of Nighthawk and Buck popped out of the low shelter.
What about our horses?
Doubt they'll go far. This can't last forever. Come morning and I'll set out after them. Now'd be a good time to grab some sleep.
After that, I got jarred hard enough to loosen every tooth in my jaw.
You just chew on enough jerky, they'll tighten up again.
By first light, the storm had subsided to a drizzle. Preacher downed coffee, another stale biscuit, and then saddled Thunder for the search. Nighthawk and Buck wished them good luck and set about drying everything they could put over their stingy fire. At noon, the sky showed patches of blue large enough, as Preacher's father had used to put it, to make a Dutchman a pair of pants. It meant a clearing trend for certain. He also found smudged hoof prints that soon led him to Sundance. The Delaware's pony allowed itself to be led peacefully along the continuing search. It seemed the odds had turned against him as the trail remained elusive. Here and there he caught the marks of a riderless horse, yet never near enough to see the missing animal. He pushed on through the afternoon. Along toward what Preacher reckoned to be about 5 o'clock, he developed a tightness and an itch between his shoulder blades. He could swear someone had put eyes on him. Then the sensation went away. Preacher shrugged off the premonition, but he remained watchfully alert. From the moment Delphus Plunkett heard hoof falls on the trail below, He knew his stock would surely rise in the outfit. His eyes narrowed to cold slits when the man came into view, then widened when he recognized it to be Preacher. Thoroughly disabused of any ideas of bravado by past experience, Delphus wisely selected to keep watch and then report back to Vickers. It soon became obvious to Delphus Plunkett why Preacher was alone. From his vantage point in a thick stand of fur, Delphus kept Preacher in sight until the wily mountain man made a solitary camp and settled in for the night. Then Delphus took the reins of his horse and led it quietly away.
It's Preacher, sure enough, alone, and not an hour's ride from here. He's got another horse with him, that gold one the engine was riding.
The storm must have driven off their mounts, scattered them through the mountains.
That's how I figured it. What do we do now? We gonna go back for Pease?
I don't think so. It's 6-1 now. Besides, he don't know we know where he is.
He didn't the last time, either.
We'll wait until just before dark, then move in on him. We'll take him from three sides, but you boys be careful not to overshoot the target. No sense in killing each other.
Preacher was having a fine dream, concentrating on the lovely movement of the backside of one Miss Cora Ames. Preacher's body took over at the first sound of a boot sole scuffing ground. He rolled free of his blankets with a big foreshot in each hand. One of the outlaws stumbled into the fire wreck. Preacher had to move to a low boulder that protruded like a giant potato from a mound of earth. Not a hell of a lot in the way of protection, but it would have to do.
Where'd he go?
What happened?
Darkness lay in shadow pools in the meadow where Preacher had camped. Yet above, long bars of magenta and crimson still streaked the western sky. It intruded enough, though weakly, for Preacher to take stock of his enemy. One man stood dumbstruck at the side of the fire, his attention riveted on the fallen thug. Preacher sighted in. The man fell face first into the fire pit.
Two down, now a minute to go.
A flicker of something darker moving against the night shadows drew his attention. Preacher counted three outlaws by their muzzle blasts. He quickly reloaded his pistol. Then they came in a rush, bent low, and Preacher raised his pistol. Three men went down. Preacher changed for the loaded pistol.
Get in there! Get going!
Preacher tried to find the voice with a bullet. Preacher counted three more muzzle blasts. He took care to aim slightly to the left and an inch lower than one of the muzzle blooms.
Oh, Lordy, Lordy. I'm hit bad.
Where are you shot, Delphus?
Through the right lung, Vickers. I ain't long for this world.
Titus Vickers and John Dancer stepped into the open at the same time. Dancer fell face first onto the ground. Vickers aimed at the muzzle flash. Then he bent and retrieved Dancer's pair of pistols. Preacher had no time to reload. He drifted off to one side in the thicket of hemlock, eyes at work to locate the enemy still out there. Preacher headed in the direction of the sound. He could take the risk of reloading in the dark, but he discarded that idea for something a lot surer. Preacher continued to edge closer to where Vickers likewise stalked him. A hidden depression in the ground caused Preacher to stumble. Vickers' shot missed, and Preacher moved away.
Preacher! You hear me? I'm supposed to bring you in alive! Ezra Pease wants to deal with you up close and personal. For my own part, I'd as soon as kill you quick and leave you for the scavengers.
Preacher refrained from making any reply. Instead, he wormed his way between two stunted fir trees and glided downslope toward the sound of the voice. Gradually, the last scudding clouds cleared away, and pale starlight spread downward. Preacher saw his man then, and he advanced. Emboldened by the silence, some night creature that had hunkered down at the outbreak of gunfire suddenly bolted through the underbrush. Realization struck Vickers that he had just fired his last shot. At once, his hand went to his powder horn. He worked desperately to load a pistol as Preacher advanced to a spot within arm's reach behind the outlaw leader.
Vickers, is it?
I'm right behind you.
Vickers reversed his empty pistol and swung to Preacher. Preacher sidestepped and swung at Vickers' head with his tomahawk. Vickers blocked the blow with his improvised club. Both men grappled for a moment, and Vickers reached his free hand for the knife in his belt sheath. Quickly, they broke away. Vickers took a vicious swing with his knife. Preacher rolled the shaft of his warhawk and swung in a horizontal slash. A keen edge cut through the clothing Vickers wore and made a shallow cut on his upper chest. Vickers whipped the pistol across in front of him and aimed at Preacher's temple. Preacher ducked away from the deadly blow and gave an overhand swing with the hawk. The hawk buried deep in the meaty portion of Vickers' right shoulder. The pistol fell from his grip. His knife flashed in the starlight. Preacher decided to end it right there. He hefted the tomahawk one last time. The tomahawk buried itself in Vickers' skull. Eyes glazed, Vickers went down. His mouth still worked, but no sound came out. Short-circuited, his brain no longer commanded his body.
I'll give you this, Vickers. You're the best piece of scent so far.
With 10 horses in tow, Preacher set out the next morning to locate the last missing mount. For all the rain, he was surprised to see how clear a trail had been left. A sore stiffness in his left arm reminded him of the previous night's activity. At around midday, Preacher decided to stop and break for lunch. He set the horses to graze and retrieved the last of his biscuits and brewed coffee. He would soften the rock-hard bread in a cup and have it with jerky. He looked up from his task to see his Appaloosa horse watching him.
That's just you and me, Thunder. With a good horse like you, a man can do anything. What you picking up out there, Thunder?
Buck's strayed mount ambled into the meadow and lined out for Thunder. The Preacher shook his head in mystified amusement.
Ain't that something? Go out to find these critters and one of them winds up finding me.
Quickly, the mountain man gathered in the stray horse, rigged the string, and headed back for the overhang where Nighthawk and Buck waited.
Now it's time to get these horses back. Distribute them and the guns. Then go after Ezra Pease. That man better say his goddamn prayers.
Nighthawk and Buck were there to greet Preacher upon his return. Buck expressed his disapproval of the plan Preacher outlined even before the mountain man had the last words out of his mouth.
I don't like the sound of that, Preacher. I don't mean I'm worried about making it back by myself. I'm thinking of what might happen if you run across the whole body of those scum.
Well, I did in a dozen of them just yesterday, didn't I?
And I still don't know how. This wound's smart some, but I can carry my load.
I don't doubt you can, old son, but we'd be slowed down with all these horses, guns, and powder. This way everyone could keep in touch.
That ended the argument. With a good 6 hours of daylight left, they set off at once. Preacher easily picked up the back trail of Vickers and his gunmen. It led northwestward.
We'd best turn west some. I got an idea where they went. We want to be able to cut them off from running south if the engines hit them again.
We're getting close to Rabbit Ear Pass. If Pease has moved camp beyond there, going south would put them right in among our nest of pilgrims.
Yeah, damned if I shouldn't have thought of that long before Buck took off. He could have carried a warning to those folks.
They wouldn't listen, you know that.
Yeah, damned if I don't think you're right. Those gospel shadows can be the most one-way critters I ever done seen. Now we'd best be finding a place to stop. We'll hit the pass tomorrow.
Hashknife rode into camp at twilight. A worried frown creased his brow. He left his mount with young Vern Beavis and strode to where a pole and brush hut had been outfitted for Ezra Pease.
No sign of Preacher anywhere.
Well, where is he? And where the hell is Titus Vickers? I'm relying on you to come up with some answers.
With that, Pease gestured to the small keg of good Tennessee sour mash. Their talk went long into the night. A pug-nosed thug brought them food, which they consumed untasted. Hashknife felt relieved when he finally got away from Pease. He headed for his own lean-to, intending to clean the brace of brand-new .44 Walker Colt he wore around his lean hips. Those six-shooters were the envy of everyone in camp. his head a bit muzzy from all the liquor. Hash Knife swung by the central campfire for a cup of coffee. Burn Beavis was drunk and talking like a fool.
I tell you, I've seen him up close. The preacher ain't human. He's part wolf, I swear it. No human man can sneak up so close to a body without being hurt. And another thing.
He's human enough. Just good. Damn good. Way I hear it, he's been in these mountains since he was a little squirt. Grew up knowing every nook and cranny. The twist and turn of every canyon and trail.
Well, don't that sound like a lobo wolf to you?
No, it doesn't. All that has to be done to get rid of Preacher is to catch him out in the open and finish him. The problem is getting him in the open.
I suppose you've got a way to do that?
I might. And if what I suspect is right, and Titus Vickers doesn't return, I'll have a chance to prove it.
Why ain't Vickers coming back?
I think Preacher's gotten them all.
That ain't possible, Hash Knife. Vickers had a dozen men with him.
We know Preacher's not alone. He has at least three of his scruffy type with him. And even when we found bodies, they've been stripped of weapons and ammunition and their horses taken. Preacher is taking those for someone to use. What I don't know is who.
Does Mr. Pease know all this?
We talked about it. Half the night, in fact. If Preacher found Vickers, he can backtrack him to us. If I were you, I'd get all the rest I could. Things are gonna get rather hot around here. Very soon.
Preacher wanted to ride ahead and see what lay beyond the big bend in the trail they followed. So he was alone when five of the fresh ruffians jumped him.
Shit!
Preacher's Hawking came to his shoulder in a smooth, swift motion. He aimed for the white puff of smoke. Preacher lowered his weapon and pulled the French rifle from its saddle scabbard. Sitting atop a horse like a thumb poked up from a fist made too good a target. Preacher slid from the saddle. He ground rein thunder and moved away toward a rotten tree that lay in an odd angle to the slope.
Those fellas up there probably ain't got the good sense to give it up and make a run, but I bet they got the good sense enough not to give me time to reload.
The remaining four thugs broke clear of the underbrush and ran downhill toward him.
Shit! Sometimes I hate being right.
Preacher eased one of his big pistols from its holster and cocked the hammer.
A little bit closer. Hold it. That's a way. One of them critters runs a bit faster than the rest, and he's gonna get his reward for it.
The others suddenly discovered they had emptied their rifles. One brought forth a pistol as they scrambled for whatever scant cover they could find. Preacher didn't even blink. Instead, he rotated the barrel.
Two of them left. Damn, what are these boys gonna learn?
Hey, you two idiots! Don't you reckon you bit off more than you can chew?
One of the thugs came charging at Preacher with a pistol in both hands. Preacher tried to remain as small a target as possible, and that caused him to miss the charging man. In seconds, the thug loomed over Preacher. The ball burned a hot line across the top of Preacher's left shoulder. The man was hurt, but he didn't go down. Undeterred, Preacher came to his feet, his tomahawk in his left hand. The man backpedaled, but it was too late. Preacher forced the axe head free and bent to wipe it on the shirt the man wore.
Shit!
Preacher leaped to one side and did a shoulder roll. Coming up on one knee, he raised his arm in a saluting gesture and let the hawk fly.
Wouldn't leave it alone, would you? Just wouldn't leave it alone.
Preacher walked over and retrieved his bloody tomahawk from the dying man's chest.
My God, Preacher. You killed me.
Yeah.
There's more. They'll be coming any time.
Yeah, I reckon that, but thank you for doing the decent thing and telling me. When it's over, I'll see you buried proper-like.
Won't be time for that.
I mean after I'm done with them.
Oh, you are a confident son of a...
Quickly, Preacher began to reload. His own weapons first, then those of the dead man. There was no time to load the last two outlaw pistols, but Preacher figured he could stand them off for a while with what he had. He skittered behind a fallen tree. Preacher made a quick count and saw he faced seven men. He exchanged rifles. Preacher selected his French for the favor. Now the odds look a little better. Back to 5-on-1.
Whew, this turned out to be one hell of a day.
Follow me, boys!
The 5 remaining riders cut diagonally across Preacher's field of fire. By chance, they lined out directly towards the trees where the 5 dead men had begun. Preacher grabbed up another rifle. Preacher sent 2 more balls after him, then turned his attention to the ridgeline above, where 4 more scruffy derelicts had suddenly shown up. With only a slight pause to take in the situation, they angled downhill to join up with the rest of their misbegotten kind.
Hell, shit! I'll be damned if I ain't worse off than before.
There was a short lull in the battle as both sides tried to decide the best course of action. Preacher used the lull to reload. He saw one of the vermin climb a tree to try to get a clear angle on it. Preacher drew a bead. Darkness had begun to fall, and it appeared as though the opponents had stalemated. Then Preacher stiffened. He saw ghost-like movements from the corner of one eye. Preacher turned his head slightly and cut a hard look at a spot where he noticed a sumac branch shiver.
Too goddamn sneaky for this bunch.
Then Preacher made out a pair of shining eyes. One of the eyes winked.
What the hell?
Then the eyes were gone. Within a minute, Preacher thought he saw a quick glitter of movement to his right. He aimed the hawk at where he had seen the slight disturbance.
Who are you aiming at, Preacher?
Oh, God! Damn it, Nighthawk! You about gave me a heart attack.
Pretty stealthy, huh? And a good thing for you. Can't you keep yourself out of trouble for just a couple of hours?
Well, not these days, anyhow. Well, hell, Nighthawk. With you here, this might turn out to be fun after all.